Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Friday afternoon. The weekend is just ahead. But, of course, if you are a hard-charging executive like Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, there really are no weekends, Tom, are there?
Compliments will get you everywhere, Steve. Thank you.
Wait, is that a compliment?
Well, you know, I guess I had this conversation with somebody, and is workaholic a negative? Right.
Well, so I think it is.
Well, holic is an addictive. I don't know the textbook definition, right? But an addictive situation that's detrimental to yourself or to others. And aside from maybe a heart attack or stress related, workaholic. Who are you hurting? If you're making more money for working and you're addicted to doing it, and you feel better as a result. Is that a negative?
Well, that's why I like having you in here, fella, because I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but.
Good afternoon.
You are hurting yourself or your family, if you're a workaholic and not spending time with your family, or, you know, it's like cats in a cradle. I just heard it this week.
I think if your son grew up just like you, that would be nice, Steve.
I hope he aims higher than that. So,
but I just think there's a situation that there's this negative stereotype on people who like what they're doing so much that they want to do more of it. And it's, you know, it does pay the bills.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, and we're kind of off track right away, but Tom Gimbel is here. He comes by from time to time to talk about business leadership issues and things like that. But I was thinking of that this weekend because, you know, I am in such a routine, and it kind of ties into all the things we're talking about today. I get up in the morning, Saturday, Sunday, I go to the health club, it's what I do. And I wake up, right? So I wake up at 6:30, 7 o'clock. I don't know what I would do at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning if I didn't do that. It's not that it's that productive, but it's just, it's my habit.
Yep.
And so I was considering that today, and I thought, well, I could always get some work done.
No, and there is that aspect, right? And I say to my team all the time, is when we cancel a staff meeting for whatever reason, I say, you know, you've been given another hour.
Right.
You thought you weren't going to have this hour. What are you going to do with that time?
Right, but maybe I would be better off just watching Charles Osgood on TV or something.
I do like Sunday morning.
So the idea, we're here to talk about habits, and we kind of backed into it in a way, and how to change bad habits or develop good habits in the workplace. But I think, you know, and I was telling you off the air, a little bit later we're going to have an author on to talk about emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And in a way, emotional intelligence and what we're talking about here, habits, is in many ways about self-awareness. We fall into these habits without really even knowing that we're there.
Yeah, I think there's a combination of a bunch of things. So you have the emotional intelligence aspect, you have self-perspective, you have creating habits, and then you have the old Malcolm Gladwell effect of 10,000 hours of practice makes you perfect, makes you an expert.
Okay.
Right? Not perfect, but an expert. Well, 10,000 hours, a 40-hour work week is 2,000 hours a year. Right. So to get 10,000 hours, you'd have to have done something for 5 years if you were only practicing. Unfortunately for all of us, when we're at work, we're actually, it's the game.
Right. The practice time is not there.
It's really applicable for golfers and musicians, but it's not for business people. Right. You've got to be practicing while you're working. And if you're only doing that, it'll take you decades to be an expert. And so you've got to have habits that you put into place and then have perspective on what you're good at and what you're not.
I would imagine everyone has, most people probably have both good habits and bad habits, right?
Yeah, but I think your exercise analogy is probably fairly applicable in a different way, is that if you go to the gym every Saturday, every Sunday, every Wednesday, whatever it is, and you do the exact same cardio every day, it may maintain as you get older and your body maintains more weight. It may not be enough, right? You need to get a harder regimen at certain times, and it's the same thing with work.
I neglected to say that at the health club they have free coffee, and that's really
and a steam room. But I mean, I get what you do,
right? Exactly. All right. So how do you develop or how do you foster good habits in the workplace?
Well, I think the number one thing is you have to have a good relationship with your manager. And so the perfect symbiotic relationship is the job of the employee is to make the manager happy, and the job of the manager is to get the employee the career track they want. And if those two things, I don't mean happy going and picking up dry cleaning
right, coffee.
But if you know, what do I need to do for you, Steve, that's going to make you happy with my performance? And if the manager can't answer that question, you've got a big issue. Right. And then you need to set habits that execute. So what time you get in the morning? What are the must do's that can't wait until tomorrow? Those types of things.
I think the communication is such an important thing because, and we've talked about this before, I'm guilty of this, where I have the conversation with the person in my head before I ever exercise it out loud. And it usually doesn't go very, it often goes better in real life than it does in my head.
Yes.
It's self-defeating.
Well, I think we get the anxiety issue that it gets created. And it's no different than with a spouse, right? You're thinking about what you're going to say when they get mad at you for being late.
Right.
Right? And you've had the argument.
You've had the argument for an hour now before you say anything.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing with a manager. What people want is communication to know where they stand on the project. Just tell me where you're at and what you need.
Right. The another thing you suggest is to plan your weeknights well. Use your weeknights. Yeah. Now, I'm reading that little memo that you sent, and when I see that, I'm like, oh, here we go. Gimbel's going to have us working until midnight, but that's not your point at all.
No, I think you've got to look at it, and people talk about work-life balance all the time, and to an extent, I agree with it, but the issue is I was talking to somebody the other day in a similar type setting as this, and I said, if someone can come to work for 8 hours a day and not think about anything outside of the job, then you have work-life balance. Right. No one can come and work for 8 hours and not think about their kids, their wife, their husband, their grandparents, death in the families. You can't.
Right.
So you're already giving up some work time for your personal life. And so on the flip side, with your personal life, you've got to do some things for your career. And you've got to be willing to give up a weeknight. You've got to be willing to think about what you need to do the next day. And you've got to be able to plan. But you also got to give yourself an emotional release on a weeknight to recharge the batteries.
And that's the point that I jumped out of me. Like, go out to a yoga class or go out to a movie that you wouldn't on a Wednesday night. And I think what that does is it shakes out your habits, your routines, and gets you out of them in one way or another.
Yeah, I think so many times, you know, it's become in vogue the past decade or so is, oh, let's have a date night on a Saturday night with your wife or your husband, right?
Right.
Do the date night on a Tuesday night.
Shake it up a little bit.
Shake it up and get your mind in a different place.
All right, Tom Gimbel, I see you everywhere. Did I see you in the New York Times recently?
You did last week.
Yeah, not bad.
Well, there's nothing better than being on Chicago's favorite radio station.
Well, I think that's probably the truest thing you've said so far today. founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network, Tom Gimbel. Thanks very much for coming
in. Always good to be with you, Steve.
It's great to see you. Who's at 10? We're easing toward a weekend here on the Wintrust Business Lunch this Friday afternoon. Andrea Haynes is with us. She's the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. You read it in the Chicago Tribune or perhaps online. Andrea, welcome back into the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Steve. Good to see you.
All right. So this morning we wake up to news in the paper and online about Illinois Institute of Technology. You know, and it's one of those places that is obviously widely respected, home of architects, designers, all of this stuff. That I think sometimes doesn't get its due. And it's out to change its image a little bit. Tell me about that.
It is. So it has been unveiling the name Illinois Tech kind of over a period of years, changing things as it gets the opportunity. Its Twitter handle is at Illinois Tech, and now most of its sweatshirts say Illinois Tech. So we kind of poked at them to find out what was going on there, why they were doing it. And it's, you know, a pretty interesting story, as you might expect with STEM type careers being so popular. They just want to underline that tech word.
So is it a big formal change or is it just sort of a creeping thing?
I mean, it's a sort of creeping thing, but I think we felt like we were sort of seeing it hit critical mass. We were just hearing it more and more. And on the other hand, people will kind of go, what's Illinois Tech? And in a way, when you think of Illinois Tech, you might think of our downstate university that's very big on tech. But just as the name was everywhere, and again, it's on Twitter, it's on their sweatshirts, you're starting to see it everywhere. You know, we were kind of like, so this is really happening. And they're like, it's definitely really happening.
So the Illinois Institute of Technology, right along the Dan Ryan, across from Comiskey Park.
Yes,
or
the famous
Field.
Sign that spans the Dan Ryan,
which
I always make sure is mentioned in every story that we write about it.
You like that, huh? That's
your
favorite part?
I do like native of Whiting, Indiana. So I have passed that sign coming to Chicago my whole life.
Yep.
So.
I grew up in Manteno, Illinois. So we'd come, you'd split. You'd go off on the Calumet and I'd go right on 57. But we'd always would drive by the Illinois Institute of Technology or Illinois Tech now.
Exactly.
There's a new law, and this is interesting to me, and I know you guys wrote about it, but the crowdfunding sort of movement has come for people with startups, right, and things like that, but not really. I mean, you couldn't do a startup or a crowdfunding for like a coffee shop, could you, or could you?
Yeah. So typically crowdfunding was associated with, you know, gadgets or things that you would potentially get one of when they became available if the manufacturing worked out. So now you can actually crowdfund a business coming in this year are, you know, laws are changing rapidly, and some have changed, some are still about to change, and things are being worked out. But they will allow you to crowdfund your startup or small business, which has implications both if you're the one starting the business or if you're an investor that has a smaller amount of money and you haven't been able to buy into big projects before. Now it's going to be easier for you to support a business that you think may do well.
It's almost like buying stock without a company that has shares of stock.
Yeah. So they call it equity crowdfunding, which when we're writing headlines, we realize is not the most musical name. Right. And is not necessarily going to draw eyeballs.
What were they thinking?
But literally, you're getting equity on a crowdfunding basis.
So, okay, let's keep it in the coffee shop. Is that fair? Is that one that would work?
Fair.
Is that a good example? Okay.
Yep.
So you've got someone in your town who wants to open up a coffee shop, and they open it up to this crowdsource equity funding. And I give them $3,000. What do I get out of that $3,000?
So you get a certain number of shares, or you get your, you know, your stake in the company. And what happens next, I think, will be the subject of many blue sky stories to come, because, you know, you could be supporting the coffee shop. Maybe you hope to make some money someday. Maybe you're hoping Starbucks will acquire your coffee shop, but maybe you just want a coffee shop,
right,
you know?
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see why people are getting into it, how motivated they are to make money, how they play with each other as investors and perhaps future investors. Lots of questions.
Right. Some guys have a lot of money and they buy a baseball team for fun. I'm going to buy a t-shirt store.
Do it.
But that $3,000 is sitting in the coffee shop, and then 10 years down the road, I decide I want it back. How does that work?
So that is another interesting aspect of it, because what's happening now is, you know, you'll be signed on for a certain amount of time, but there are now other enterprising business people that are creating platforms where you could resell that. So if you decide you want to get out in a certain time period when it's not time to get out, there will be platforms where you could sell it to me. So that creates almost
if I want to get out in seven years instead of ten, I would sell it to you.
Exactly.
And so where's my profit? Is it a dividend?
Could be dividends, could be that the company sells. Just lots of unanswered questions about how this is all going to work.
It sounds like a cool, natural sort of progression, but it's a little dark on the road ahead.
I don't really know. You know, I think there'll, you know, I'm sure be success stories, and I'm sure be drama as it gets worked out, as with everything. I think it raises just tons and tons of interesting questions, and it will be fascinating to cover how this plays out for people.
Yeah, and so why not? If you want to open that coffee shop and you need help, this is a nice way to get the equity to do it.
You know, small businesses are very excited about it because it opens a whole new, you know, realm of funding for them.
Andrea Haines is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation and Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It is 12:36. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter. I'm at Steve Bertrand, or you can check me out on Facebook, Steve Bertrand. Also have Steve Bertrand on Books and Steve Bertrand Travel. So a few spots on Facebook. I was talking earlier with Tom Gimbel of the LaSalle Network about self-awareness, and a little bit off the air, maybe on the air too, if I don't remember, but about emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is one of those phrases you hear a lot in everyday life, in your personal life, but certainly when it comes to in the office as well. Valerie Dittmar is with us now. She's an expert on that, the author of The Power of Feelings, A Practical Guide to Emotional Intelligence. Valerie, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much.
All right, so just the idea of this phrase, emotional intelligence, I think when people hear that, it might be a little intimidating to them. What does that mean, emotional intelligence?
Well, to tell you the truth, there is no one definition that is agreed upon by all the experts. So since you're asking me, I say emotional intelligence is the ability to relate to your feelings consciously, to create them consciously, and to implement them in such a way that they actually support your goals in life.
So earlier in the program, we were talking about habits in the workplace and business habits, and to change your habits is sort of at first requires a self-awareness.
Definitely.
And I think in emotional intelligence, we're talking a lot about self-awareness as well.
Yeah, because oftentimes we're talking about emotional habits. That's one way to put it.
Right.
So we have, we're used to reacting to certain situations with certain emotional patterns. Some of those might be working really well for us and others not.
So someone comes into the office, they have missed their monthly quota on sales, and the boss automatically reacts with anger. That is his emotional habit. It doesn't serve him well, certainly doesn't serve the employee well, and probably doesn't serve the company well either.
It really depends on the quality of the anger. If the anger is anger power, which is a positive force, then that can be really healthy to confront the person to in a constructive way and to set a boundary and to say, listen, there's something not working here. So right. that can be that's actually necessary. If an executive or a person, a manager doesn't have that, then we have a problem.
If there's no anger quotient?
If there's no anger power in a positive sense. What you're referring to is actually the negative aspect of anger, where it can be really destructive to the person's motivation and self-esteem.
Right.
And the importance is to learn to tell the difference and to learn how I can transform negative anger into positive anger that is constructive.
So let's take that from either side, because there's the anger executor and there's the anger receiver, mm-hmm. right? So let's start with the anger executor. Mm-hmm. How do you recognize when it's positive, when it's negative?
So anger in its shadow expression is destructive. So the moment anger becomes destructive, it's negative. Anger is a positive thing if it allows you to be clear about what's working and not. It allows you to be articulate and it allows you to get moving, to do something about it, whether it is to give feedback or to take some other action to compensate the mistake that's been made.
So how about when you're sitting in the chair across from the boss and you're the recipient of the anger?
So, best case scenario, the boss is in a positive state of anger.
Right, it's a good anger we got coming at us.
Yeah, and the recipient is able to feel a positive shame, which allows him or her to self-reflect and to absorb the feedback, to look at what he did, and to check whether there's something he could have done differently
Interesting, provocative phrase, positive shame.
Yeah, it is.
You're smiling a little bit. You're proud of that one.
Well, one of my missions, actually, is to make people aware of the fact that the feelings that we commonly consider to be negative, they're not necessarily bad. It's just that they pop up in situations that are different than we would like them to be, which is why we experience them to be uncomfortable or we associate them with bad things.
Right.
But these are the strategies that we developed over evolution to actually cope with the situations that are not the way we want them to be. So if we just try to shut them out, we're fooling ourselves.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way to argue with you, and because it's hard for me to understand that there might be a positive shame. So I'm trying to think of what a different emotion or different word might be, but mm-hmm. I don't know what the word would be.
So there's been some really interesting research on this, where people, due to accidents or surgery, lost the ability to feel shame, for mm-hmm. instance. Like Antonio Damasio is a very well-known researcher in this. And he says that when people have lost that ability to feel shame, their social navigation doesn't work at all anymore. They're completely unable to read other people and to figure out whether their own behavior is appropriate.
But shame to me implies, if you feel shameful, that implies to me that you performed a shameful act, that you performed in a way that wasn't just short of a goal, but in a way that was inappropriate.
Well, basically, shame in a good sense comes up whenever you make a mistake.
So if I were to make a mistake and call you Valerie instead of Vivian, as I did earlier mistakenly,
yes.
I should feel shame. That's the feeling I feel is shame.
I would have a moment of shame if that was brought to my awareness. I would have a moment of like, oops.
Right.
And that would allow me to self-reflect and then take responsibility like you did.
Right.
And then do something about it like you also did.
Right. So I guess I had that feeling. I had all of that. I just didn't use that word.
Yeah. Because normally we use that word for really bad things.
Right. Let's say, I know you work with managers in offices and businesses and things like that. When you walk into a business, can you sort of judge or gauge their emotional intelligence? Is there emotional intelligence culture at an office?
Totally.
It's
all about culture.
Really?
Yes, it's not an individual thing. It's a culture thing.
So how do you identify problems and then change them?
Well, the best way is to go to a meeting. after 10 minutes, maximum half an hour in a meeting, you know what you're looking at.
Really?
Yes, and it has a lot to do with how comfortable people are to speak their minds and their hearts, how much they try to argue things rationally that are really not rational, but they're much more on an intuitive, personal, emotional level. And that's one of the things that becomes very expensive for companies when they're not able to really have a real conversation between people about what people are really feeling about certain decisions or possibilities, mm-hmm. But rather always try to take it to a rational level when many things, to be honest, we cannot decide purely on that level.
So if you need to change the emotional intelligence of an office culture, you've got several actors there. Can you do it?
Of course, it can be done, and it's a project. And the companies that I work with are companies that realize that this is really where they're not being as efficient or effective as they could be, that they're losing a lot of time, energy, and money in the lack of emotional intelligence
right.
in their culture.
It goes back to me then to, well, I mean, it's like where we started, understanding punishing anger versus positive anger, negative anger versus or positive disagreements versus argumentative disagreements for argument's sake.
So a lot of it is actually about educating people, because the moment you give them information about this, their mind is able to cooperate with the emotional level.
Right.
And that already goes a long way. So suddenly, within half an hour, you have executives speaking about their moments of shame or fear or sadness or anger. And that's incredible.
That's Vivian Ditmer, the author of the book, The Power of Feelings, A Practical Guide to Emotional Intelligence. Good for everyday life, good for the workplace as well. Thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Business Lunch. We're here on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion and Kim and Beyonce in traffic. Steve Bertrand here on the Friday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch. By the way, I meant to mention earlier, but I hope you'll come by tomorrow at the Chicago Adventure Travel Show. It's at the Rosemont Convention Center, and I'm going to be there on a panel. Well, there are two of us. Tim McHenry, who is the CEO and founder of Cooper's Hawk, is going to be there. And so I'm going to talk to Tim about wine and about travel for wine and all of that. That's tomorrow. I'll be at the Chicago Travel Adventure Show. Hope to see you there. If you see me, come by, say hi. Scott Kleinberg is here. He writes about social media from the Chicago Tribune. And today, his belly is full of Chipotle burritos.
Very, very nice of you, Steve.
Thank you. About 10 days ago or so, we were talking about Chipotle for one reason or another.
Okay, that
and
way
I said that I was going to bring in lunch because I like what Chipotle tries to do, the locally sourced food, the non-antibiotic, antibiotic-free food and things like that. So,
right.
You know, they've had a rough year. They've been sort of taking it on the chin. So I thought, well, we'll just have a Chipotle lunch. And so Yun's down there barely paying attention to anything we're doing. He's got his face in a burrito, and Scott's got his burrito, so we're going to have a lunch. So anyway, I'm glad you're here, and I'm sorry I forgot it Wednesday.
Oh, no problem. It's very nice of you.
I was kind of disappointed the way you called me out on Twitter for it. But all right, so Scott's especially in a good mood, not just because of the burrito, but because emojis are in the social media calendar again.
New emojis. 74 new emojis. I don't know how many that is total, but you
too know. Many. It's too many, Scott.
Well, soon I don't have to write any words. Everything I send is going to be an emoji. Every email I ever send you, all emojis.
That's actually true, isn't it? You can order now in some hotels.
Oh, yeah.
Room service with just emojis.
Room service with emojis. Domino's has pizza emoji. You can, yeah.
So,
do all that stuff.
I mean, I can imagine, you know, I take groups. We're just talking about travel. I take groups to Europe all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really would serve well there. If you're in a hotel and you want to order something,
oh, yeah.
You don't speak the language or someone comes here.
Yep. I think it's a fantastic idea. And the way it's going, I mean, the way they're adding things, you know, you'll have one for absolutely everything.
And so there's this emoji cabal who creates
the
or
consortium,
approves
yes.
a consortium. And so the 72, these are 72 candidates for approved emojis?
These are, yeah, 74 candidates.
74.
And usually when they narrow it down to this point, they're usually approved. Usually there's a lot more to narrow it down to this point. So, yeah. So by mid-2016, they're, if, unless something crazy happens, they'll approve it. And then they submit it to the other company. So then Apple gets it. Then Google gets it. And they decide when to implement it on their devices following this.
I only talk crazy about this to watch your face when we do.
I know how excited it makes you to see
bacon,
me excited.
There'll be a bacon emoji.
Yes, finally
long
a bacon
time
emoji.
Coming. Long time.
I don't know what took so long.
It's really sad. Clown face. That makes sense. Potato.
Yep. Pancakes, bacon and pancakes. I mean, you need to be able to express those emotions together.
So man in a tuxedo.
Yep, yep. Stuffed flatbread. I don't well, understand that one.
I highlighted that one, stuffed flatbread. Yeah. Why would there be a stuffed flatbread emoji?
I don't know. I wonder, you know, like, who said we need to have a stuffed flatbread? They pushed it through.
There's a drooling face, so we could have maybe a bacon, stuffed flatbread, and then a drooling face.
Yes, yes.
And
there's rolling on the floor laughing, so whenever you say something, I can do that. I mean, you know, it's, right. It's perfect.
Right. And then a hand with index and middle finger crossed. That's like...
Yeah, I guess so.
How do you say, what do you say? That's like...
like good luck kind of thing, or... Fingers
right.
crossed, I guess.
Fingers crossed, right. Yeah. Good luck. Or if you're lying to someone and I tell you I'm saying the absolute truth.
Right, right.
Cross
There's
my fingers.
That, right.
Multiple uses for that. Okay, so we'll be on the lookout for these new emojis.
Yep.
Football's coming up. ESPN, Twitter, they're very good at sort of harnessing all of that. And Facebook wants in on it. Explain that for me.
Yeah, Facebook really realized that Twitter really leads when it comes to real-time sports talk. So they are launching something called Facebook Sports Stadium, which is not a separate app, at least not right now. It's going to be part of the Facebook experience coming soon. And it'll be like a tab, like on your app kind of thing. And it's going to have everything, including, you know, place for chat, live scores, the countdown clock of your favorite team, so you can actually know in real time when people are, you know, when teams are scoring. So it's got potential.
What took them so long?
You know, I don't know. It seems like they were focusing on other things. It seems like they thought that people were still talking about this within their feeds and they didn't really need to have a hub for it.
Right.
But I don't know that that's true. I mean, when I'm talking about like major sporting events, when I'm watching the Super Bowl or something like that, I am absolutely talking about that on Twitter. And it's not because I'm a Twitter, more of a Twitter person than a Facebook person. I just think that's how it technically goes. People talk about the actual story and they talk about it after the fact. Twitter, it's as it's happening.
I was going to say, you think of it as more instantaneous with a much wider audience as well.
I do. And I think Facebook has actually admitted in times past that people look at Twitter that way and they want to get in on that. So they're doing it in every category possible.
One more thing I want to talk about. There was a Bloomberg story this week about the amount of money Google pays Apple to have their search engine on iPhones.
Yes. Yes.
Big money.
$1 billion.
Wow.
And it was interesting because it's $1 billion in 2014. We don't know about 2015. We know about 2014 because there was some kind of lawsuit that was going on, and this information was always secret. They always tried to find out and they couldn't. And somewhere printed in this lawsuit that was unrelated was the information about this. So everybody gleaned in on that and found it and was like, wow, it's $1 billion.
So Google's there, not just Safari. Or Google's there.
Right.
The idea is Google makes a lot of money by people using searches and buying.
Yes.
And the billion comes from Google. Is it a fee or is it a share?
It's a fee, but then they also get a share for all the searches. So who knows how the $1 billion comes back into, you know, into their coffers. So it's just crazy. And I keep getting stuck on the fact that it's 2014. So 2015
right.
could have been that much more.
Scott Kleinberg writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch, and enjoy your lunch there, Scott.
Thank you very much.
On the 720 WGN.